Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jarrod. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the greatest disasters in world history and some you may never have heard of. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
We are not interested in making light of some of the quite substantial mortality rates in some of these disasters, are we?
No.
Just interested in finding out what went wrong, aren't we?
Yeah, you think?
If it happened on the news, some of this stuff, I reckon you'd be interested, you piece of shit.
Every seed of information, Phil, that rolls from the news enters me like sweet, sweet nectar and is devoured as if it were such a thing.
What are we wanging on about this week?
The Iraq poison grain disaster.
Soaring wheat production in Mexico has startled the world. It came about through research by the Rockefeller Foundation and cooperation of Mexican farmers. Its leader, Dr. Norman Borlaug, an American from Iowa, won a Nobel Prize for his work in the development of a wheat that gives an incredible higher yield in growth.
Over here, of course, are many new varieties of Mexican wheat that are in final stages of testing. We have 60 yield tests, 20 new lines in each of those yield tests, which means that there are about 1,200 new lines being tested for adaptation to different parts of Mexico. Again, these
sitting beside Dr. Borlaug are students from East and West Mexico. Pakistan, as well as India. All of them are learning about the new Mexican dwarf wheat, which is now producing abundant harvests over much of Asia.
Iraq. Iraq. Do you say Iraq or Iraq?
Iraq, because I'm normal.
Is this a bit like the Vincent van Gogh, Vincent van Gogh thing, when actually it's neither? Because it's Van Gogh, isn't it?
I was brought up with Van Gogh.
Americans say Van Gogh.
Well, I always thought it was just poncy art people said Van Gogh because they wanted to look down on people like me who said Van Gogh.
Well, it's possible, but they're also wrong.
Yeah, well, maybe. But Van Gogh. If I was brought up with it a certain way, it stays that way.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite reluctant to call it Nestle. It was Nestles when I was a kid.
Well, that's just wrong.
I know, but...
You can't just say things wrong. Now then, the history of Iraq has been a mixed affair. I don't really know what's going on in Iraq at the moment. It's probably not good, is it?
Don't think it's great.
Would you go for a holiday?
No. No. I wouldn't even go to Turkey, mate, or Egypt.
I'm not going to fucking Turkey.
No way. I wouldn't go to Turkey, Tunisia, Egypt.
Mate,
I don't think I'd go to Morocco now.
The history of our lives, though, in terms of war, has been the history of wars in Iraq, hasn't it?
Yes.
We've had two of them that I can remember.
I remember the first one very clearly because that was the first one where suddenly it was like, oh my God, this is like watching a computer game. It's all real time. Shock and awe, wasn't it?
Was it Shock and Awe?
I think Shock and Awe was the first one.
Was it Shock and Awe? Desert Storm.
Desert Storm.
Desert Storm was the first one. And maybe they did say Shock and Awe. Although I remember...
Well, maybe Shock and Awe was the second one.
I think George Bush Jr. said Shock and Awe because I remember the front page of The Guardian that went, shocking and awful. The Guardian.
Please donate a quid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. On the very rare occasions where I do grub myself down enough to read a Guardian article, I do read it and at the end say, oh, whilst you're here, could you give us some money because nobody bothers reading us?
Yeah, that's right. Whereas the Times go, do you want to read this article? Give us a fucking quid, mate. right at the top, mate. You want more than the first two sentences? We want a fucking quid.
Which is actually really frustrating when you want to read something. Yeah. But I can't really afford to subscribe to both the Telegraph and the Times.
Right. Well, I've stuck with
the Telegraph because that's fully in accordance with my viewpoints.
The Telegraph basically goes, oh no, I don't think you should be reading this. did you watch the mega coverage of both of these saucy wars?
Oh yeah.
They're probably the best covered wars, aren't they, I think?
Yeah.
Like, Vietnam was when they really worked out how to cover a war.
That's the blueprint.
That's the blueprint for a war. Mm. But what happened in Vietnam was all of the journalists covered the war on their own terms, and that made people not like the war. Whereas these two saucy Iraq wars, they realised that if they control the journalists, people will love these wars.
Yeah.
So these would be very popular wars. Yeah.
Shock and awe, like fireworks night.
Yeah, people loved them. And they particularly loved the first war, didn't they? Those pictures of the smart bombs and all the rest of that. Scud missiles.
Well, that's a big thing now, isn't it? You know, in the old days, it was just like, boom, boom, hammer everything.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, well, we avoided this school down this road and there's no collateral damage, which of course is...
Nonsense.
I mean, you can always make better weapons, but the concept of a war without collateral damage is
just nonsense.
It's utterly ludicrous, and we shouldn't pretend.
Yeah, I've always said it's just like the old adage: you can't make an omelette without killing civilians. So, Phil, the poison grain disaster. What was it?
A poisoning incident where grain treated with a particular fungicide found its way into the human food chain.
Humbug Billy! Yeah, this is another Humbug Billy one, isn't it?
It's got elements of it.
When did it happen?
Late in the year of 1971 and early in the year of 1972.
And how many people died?
The recorded death toll is 459, but it could have been much, much higher.
Because of Iraq being, like, totalitarian and that?
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening in Iraq in 1971. Is it Saddam?
No, he's not quite. He's on the way.
Okay.
He's on the way.
Basically, I'm thick as pig shit. I don't actually know. I don't know anything about Iraq.
I think you need to.
Okay, give me some background, Phil. Tell me about... teach us about Iraq.
Okay, well, we all know Iraq, don't we? It's been on the news a fair bit in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But just in case... you have been living underground in a box with no TV.
Or under the pall of smoke, which is how it's usually covered on TV.
I'll tell you about Iraq. Iraq is a country in Western Asia, bordered by Turkey to the north, Iran to the east, Kuwait to the southeast, Saudi Arabia to the south, Jordan to the southwest, and Syria to the west. The capital and largest city is Baghdad, and the official languages of Iraq are Arabic and Kurdish.
So the Arabs don't like the Kurds, is that right?
Something along those lines. Gets a bit complicated when you look into it, doesn't it?
I mean, I don't know much about geopolitics, but I'm imagining the Kurds don't like the Arabs.
Guessing.
Okie dokie.
Their names I hear a lot. Phil, whenever I get the opportunity, you know I always like to give you facts.
Love a fact.
In Arabic, Iraq means deeply rooted, well-watered and fertile.
Ooh, lovely.
Iraq first took part in the Olympic Games in 1948.
Lovely.
That would be London, if I remember rightly. And it has only ever won one medal, Iraq, and that was a bronze in weightlifting in the 1960 Games, which I believe was Rome. If somebody admires an Iraqi's possession, such as a vase, the Iraqi will usually insist that the person takes it. Therefore, it is proper etiquette to avoid lavishly praising another person's possessions.
Oh, Beck does this. Like, we'll have to come round and they'll, like, they'll see a book or something. She'll have it. And I'm like, it's mine. It's bloody mine. So tell me about this grain then. How to get poisoned.
So, okay. We're in late 1971. T-Rex is smashing the charts with just about everything they release. Mm-hmm. Edward Heath is Prime Minister, and a CAT scan was used in a hospital for the very first time. And, Phil, the House of Commons voted in favour of joining the EEC by a margin of 356 to 244. But the UK doesn't concern us, Phil. What concerns us is deeply rooted, well-watered and fertile.
Yeah.
In other words...
Iraq.
Iraq. Things were different in Iraq, Phil. Yeah. T-Rex hadn't made inroads into that region and they couldn't join the EEC even if they wanted to.
No.
Not T-Rex, Iraq. Iraq was actually suffering from a pretty bad drought in late 1971. It was the worst in the region for several decades and it was pushing people to the brink of famine. Now, the nation itself... because of this drought, had seen a drop in its wheat yields over the years. So the stocks themselves were already very, very low. So when the drought came along fully, they were really facing a severe deficit in their stock.
Yeah, because they hadn't made much wheat.
Yeah.
And then they used up the wheat what they had made.
Yeah, they're buggered. The government, Phil, needed to act fast.
We need a faster growing wheat.
Yes, that's exactly the phrase they used. And they looked around the world. And it just so happened that Mexico were world leaders in developing high-yield wheat.
Better wheat.
And that's largely because of a US-funded research program that had been going on in Mexico since the mid-40s.
I imagine that American-funded scientific experiments in Mexico, they are going to be pretty well regulated, I should imagine. That's going to be like an iron trap, isn't it? There's not going to be no wiggle room there.
Well, you say that, some regulation. Regulation becomes quite
important.
Quite important in this one. Right, Phil, but the short of all of this is that one of those high-yielding varieties of wheat was called Mexipac.
Lovely.
The government contracted the Mexican supplier Cargill to deliver 0.1 million tons of wheat in time for the Iraqi October-November 1971 planting season. It was said that the decision to import the wheat was made by the government's number two man, Saddam Hussein.
Little Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
He's importing Mexican wheat?
He's importing Mexican wheat.
What could possibly go wrong?
He was allegedly the person who...
Are you seriously telling me that saucy Saddam Hussein has done something wrong? Well, I'm willing to go on with this podcast, but I'm saying I am terribly sceptical.
Well, he thought he was doing good.
I'm sure he had the best intentions in importing this genetically modified Mexican wheat into his country.
There was a news reporter who said when he interviewed, I can't remember whether it was Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi, blew wind a lot. One of them did. I think it might have been Gaddafi, but I always remember Saddam Hussein in like quite tight khaki military wear. And yeah. I could always imagine a fart really struggling to get out of those trousers.
Of the two, I can imagine Gaddafi being the more breezy of the two. Because he's in a tent. And if you've ever been camping, all bets are off when you're camping, aren't you? Because that fart isn't getting trapped anywhere.
Exactly.
Just going out of flap.
Yeah.
Whereas Saddam Hussein blowing off, he's in a palace and that is going to hang around.
A very tight... khaki
terribly
trousers.
Tight fatigues.
That wind is going to hit the side of the trousers, bounce back, hit the leg, go up the top, go down.
Right. It's like a ricocheting bullet.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Whereas Gaddafi, he's always dressed for evensong, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's just going to wave out. You're not even going to notice that in Gaddafi.
No.
It'll carry
into the sunset and the dew across the dunes. So, there was a problem when it came to shipping this wheat from Mexico to Iraq, because that is a very long sea voyage.
Yeah, it's a bastard long way, that.
And during that time, because of the conditions of that long marine journey, this wheat had an increased risk of germinating. So, to avoid that, the wheat was coated with a special fungicide on the journey.
Yeah.
Okay, now, the problem is that fungicide was mercury based.
Right.
Good old safe non-toxic mercury.
They dipped it in mercury. Isn't it great being a human? We are taking mercury dipped wheat across the oceans. Mercury makes you go mad, doesn't it?
Because
that's why that's where the Mad Hatter comes from. Do you know this?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think so, because they used to put mercury on the top of top hats. And so people who made top hats went fucking bananas because they were dealing with mercury.
And that's where Lewis Carroll got the... that's interesting.
As far as I know. But like all my facts, probably bollocks.
Well, once I've done the farting dictator fact check, I'll look into that as well. Okay. Now, the thing with mercury, right? It actually is a very effective fungicide, and it was very, very cheap as well. Okay, once the grain that had been coated in mercury was
coated,
like an
incredibly severe M&M.
Well, you know, coated, sprayed, lightly dusted, lightly glazed with mercury. It would actually, once you planted it, it would grow and it would be quite safe.
Oh right, okay.
So it kind of, it's a preserver. But once it starts growing, it's okay. So, essentially, sounds awful, but it all seemed tickety-boo to use a lethal, highly toxic chemical called mercury. Now, Phil, people did know the risks of coating grain with mercury.
It is the 70s after all.
Yes. In fact, as a fungicide, it was banned in Sweden in 1966.
Yep.
Iraq itself actually had form with this problem, as they had their own mercury poisoning there in 1960, which killed about 200 people. One of the things to come out of that tragedy in 1960 was to make it law that toxic grain sacks had to be clearly labelled.
Can we label all this toxic grain? Can we at least put a T on it?
It reminds me of that Humbug Billy thing where it's like, where's the arsenic? Oh, yeah. it's the second vat in the loft.
It is essentially, it is an Iraqi remake of the Humbug Billy story.
Yeah. They also would colour the grain with a dye for easy identification.
Bright green?
In this case, pink, actually. Oh. Nice pink colour. So if you saw pink grain, you'd go, whoa.
That to me doesn't seem like a colour that denotes badness. Like if it was red grain or green grain, but, you know, pink, you just think it's pomegranate.
Well, I think you got a point, Phil, but at the end of the day, they knew the risks.
Yep.
They took their precautions.
Colored it pink.
So I'm going to put it back to you, Phil. What went wrong?
Quite a number of factors came into play to cause this disaster.
Oh.
Firstly, the sacks of wheat bound for Iraq did have warnings on them.
Yes, what's the problem?
The problem, Phil, was that the warnings were in two languages.
Right.
Right now, I know that you're going to go straight into saying at least one of these languages was going to be Arabic.
I would say Arabic and Kurdish.
You would be wrong on both counts.
Ah.
English and Spanish.
Not a good idea.
Because it's coming from Mexico, so that's why the Spanish connection.
Yeah.
And the English connection, I imagine, what, because of friends? I can't think of another reason why it would be in English.
Everyone speaks English.
Everyone does speak
English. Well, we used to own most of the world.
It's not us, though, is it? It's America that's done that.
They're the two languages of America, aren't they? The two biggest languages in the US.
Yeah, good point. US so it's funded. American and Spanish, essentially. I'm not saying this is America's fault, but, you know, if the shoe fits. Both languages really weren't spoken in Iraq at all.
No, I could imagine amongst the population that raw product grain is heading for,
no,
they're not going to be high up in competency with English as their second language.
Not a huge problem, though, speaking English and Spanish, because to get around this problem, what they've done is they put the universal symbol of don't eat me onto onto the sacks.
Yeah.
Old skull and crossbones.
Oh, the old poison, don't come near, don't, oh, this is all very dangerous, stay well away. Sign.
Or pirates.
Yes.
It's one or the other, isn't
one
it?
One or the other.
It's either poison or pirates.
Yeah. Right? If you've got a big sack of wheat, though, you're more likely to think it's poison than pirates.
Yes, exactly. Because pirates don't brand that way, do they? They don't brand the booty.
No.
It sounds like a disco track.
Don't brand the
pirates don't brand the booty. I have spent so many nights at weddings dancing to Pirates Don't Brand the Booty. But pirates don't brand the booty.
No.
When this grain coated in, dipped in mercury got to Iraq, right, obviously they would see the symbol for poison / pirates and realise that this was...
We better get a translation person in because that wording might relate to that sign about poison.
Exactly. We get a good translator in here,
or
to Collins find out
Gem Dictionary
exactly what kind of pirate we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Right? Is it going to be a bloodthirsty Bluebeard type pirate, or, you know, one of those sort of Halloween sexy pirates? Just don't know. So, the good thing about the skull and crossbones symbol, it is across all cultures and races without exception, isn't it, Phil?
Yes.
Apart from Iraq.
Ah!
Who don't understand the skull and crossbones. It's not part of their culture.
Oh, it's not used there.
This is a little thing that we like to call Eurocentricism. Eurocentricism.
Right.
We all think... because we all understand that symbol as being denoting badness, that somehow it's universal, which of course it absolutely bloody isn't.
Oh.
It's just one of our symbols. You know what I mean?
They might as well think, they could have well thought it's a company logo or something.
Well, exactly. And that's what they did think. They just, the thing is, they either thought that or didn't think anything because it's essentially just a picture, isn't it?
Oh,
it's just a picture. If we imported like a load of olives or something, right?
Yeah.
And they all had like a picture of like a boat on it. and we all ate it and died, and all the Iraqis were going, well, boat is the international symbol for poison, isn't it? Surely you guys know that.
I suppose there's nothing inherently. I mean, I would automatically think bone, skeleton, death. But I suppose only because I've been brought up with it, not necessarily a connection,
there's,
I suppose,
something
is
in
there?
That, though, isn't there? I mean, you couldn't see it. I mean, a skull and crossed bones, you couldn't go... Looks like this is good.
Yeah, because the cross is sort of saying stay away, isn't it? Crosses
only because
be
you
null.
Know of a cross as saying stay away. And Mexico, all the rest of it, Day of the Dead, it's a symbol of rebirth, isn't it?
Of course,
and sort of,
yes.
All that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily mean we've dipped your grain in mercury. That's what I'm saying. And if they can't go on the language aspect because they can't speak Spanish or English, and they can't go on the picture of a skull...
Yeah, fair play.
And the stuff they've bought is essentially grain. You'd understand that.
Yeah.
So the skull and crossbones didn't help
in
any real meaningful way. Another problem was that the shipments of grain arrived in Iraq between September and November 1971.
Right.
Now, that meant that the grain was too late for planting.
Oh.
Couldn't plant it, mate.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever watched Gardener's World. I certainly haven't. But you have to plant flowers at a certain time, otherwise they will die immediately.
Right.
That meant the farmers were in possession of sacks of strange-looking pint wheat that they could not plant and were not supposed to eat. Right? So essentially, they said, excuse me, Mexico, can we have some grain because we're starving?
Right.
And Mexico said, certainly, here is your grain. Mm. However, we've dipped it in mercury and you can't plant it or eat it. But apart from that, absolutely fine.
Right, okay.
Are they going to put that in Arabic or Kurdish on the sacks? No, they're not. Are we going to print a symbol that you might be able to understand as poisonous? Oh, no, we are not. So that's where we are.
There's some communications discrepancy between Mexico and Iraq. I'm just getting the vibe.
Getting the vibe of that.
Getting the vibe.
No, it sounds like a big problem.
Right.
But the Iraqi government, they're not idiots, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't blasé about this. They knew what was in these sacks.
Right.
And they knew that they had been labelled badly.
Right, okay.
Okay. So they did make sure that they informed the farmers of the toxicity of the wheat. They told them, Phil.
Oh,
they said, here's some wheat for your starving people. Mm. It will kill you.
So they probably put out some information with the wheat.
Yeah.
A bit of paper.
Yeah.
So that seems all straightforward to me then.
But for some reason, the farmers didn't believe it.
Oh.
They did not believe.
They didn't believe. Just, no, don't believe that.
Just didn't trust the information.
Oh my God. What sort of faith have you got in your government where they go, don't eat this. Yeah, this will kill. Nah. Nah.
Don't trust you, mate. I do not trust you.
Mind you, saying that, talking of Gulf Wars, we all remember Comical Alley, don't we?
Do you remember?
Yeah, he was the best, wasn't he?
Do you know what? Every politician has now taken on his mantle.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what Trump does, exactly what Boris does. Yeah. There's no problem. Keep consuming. There are no tanks.
He's probably a very well-paid American government advisor now.
I would have thought so. So you can see why they wouldn't have trusted them, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So many of the farmers just washed the dye off the wheat and gave some to their livestock, which ingested it with no physical consequences.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you'd be pretty certain it was okay if you washed it off, gave it to a pig, and the pig was fine, wouldn't you?
You would, but I would also think, why is this dyed?
Yeah, you would think why it's dyed, but you're giving it to a pig and it's fine.
Yeah.
I think if I give something to a pig and it was fine, I mean, that's another watchword in my life. I give it to a pig and it's fine.
Well, very close structurally pigs, aren't they, to us?
They are, aren't they? We're very similar to pigs. We apparently taste a lot like pigs.
I heard that. We are sloppy pork.
Which is a shame because pig is delicious. Which means that we are probably pretty special.
I think we are. Apparently we're quite sloppy.
What do you mean by sloppy?
We're not good meat. We're all sort of fatty.
Oh, really?
You know, like we're quite sort of fatty bits of...
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I certainly am.
Well, so I've heard.
So, the wheat got sold around and many people started to make bread with it.
Okay, so you've got the wheat, they washed it off. They can't plant it, so they're like, okay, well, let's start trading it. Let's do stuff with it.
It's the middle of a famine. Yeah. And if you've given some food to a pig and the pig's fine... Well, then I think, you know, all bets are off, really. You'd be eating whatever you could.
Yeah, fair play.
You know.
So they're making bread with it.
Fun pink bread, right?
Oh, it would be, wouldn't it?
The Iraqi children particularly liked it because it went pink.
Ah, so not everyone washed it off.
No, then they used it as dye.
Oh.
The fun pink bread.
Oh, that would be so cool to have pink bread.
I bet people, like, actually look back with fondness on the pink bread. What happened to that? That was great, wasn't it? Back in the 70s, we used to have pink bread.
Oh, chew it.
They thought it was really fun and different and interesting. Those that washed the dye off, though, and stopped the kids enjoying the fun of pink bread were unaware that although they were washing the dye off the grain, they weren't washing off the mercury. We have come to associate the pink dye with the poison, which, of course, it's not.
Yes.
The mercury is still there.
God,
insidious.
So make no difference. So either you got a choice of killing children with lovely pink fun bread or killing children with boring normal bread.
Exactly. After a few weeks, Iraqi hospitals started to be flooded with people who complained of being very, very ill.
Oh.
Lots of people were also dying quite quickly. See, the problem with mercury poisoning is that it tends to take between 16 and 38 days to show. So you wouldn't necessarily connect it with the lovely, fun pink bread you've just been eating.
And also, if you'd given it to your livestock...
Yeah.
So even if they're not all right, you're not going to know for nearly half a month to a month.
That pig is going to be absolutely fine for a good fortnight, right? So really, giving the mercury to the pig has turned out... to not be a good forecaster of whether there was mercury in the grain.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, oh,
so
dear.
That's a good lesson, isn't it?
Yes.
So next time your mum says, have you given it to a pig? You know, you can say, well, mum, we had to stop giving things to the pig as a main diagnostic instrument. Mercury poisoning is pretty horrible. Mm. I mean, being poisoned by most things is pretty horrible. What's mercury poisoning like?
Well, the most common symptom in less serious cases was something known as paresthesia.
Yeah.
Right. Now, that is an abnormal tingling, pricking, chilling, burning, or sort of numb sensation of the skin.
Dead leg.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, sort of all over or in any specific place. Now, in worst cases, doctors were seeing something called ataxia. Yeah. Right, now, this is awful. Now, this would typically be a loss of balance, a blindness or reduced vision, and a very, very high possibility of death resulting from a complete failure of the central nervous system. Not nice. Not nice poisoning at all. Now, the seriousness of a person suffering really did come down to how much of the poison grain they had consumed. Mm-hmm. It was as simple as that, because obviously the more mercury you take, the more serious your symptoms are.
Yeah.
And just as an aside, Phil, a little cheeky fact here, if every single sack of poison grain that had been imported into Iraq had been consumed, there would have been about 3 million cases of poisoning in that country.
Wow, bloody hell.
Yeah, fortunately, it didn't though.
Why didn't it then? Why didn't it call? Why didn't everybody eat them? Because if it takes 2 weeks to work out you're being poisoned, why didn't everyone just eat the food? They're starving. Why didn't they?
Well, a lot of doctors in the hospital remembered seeing similar symptoms in that 1960 outbreak that we mentioned before. And if we know anything about Iraqi people, is that they have long memories. So it didn't take long for both local and international health experts to make that connection between the illnesses they were witnessing and the ingestion of the mercury-laden wheat. Clever people.
Yeah.
By the 26th of December 1971, Boxing Day, a warning had been issued to the Iraqi government. By January 1972, the government started to strongly warn the population about eating the grain. Slight problem, Phil. They were very careful not to mention the large numbers of people who had already died or were seriously ill.
Why?
Well, it was a total news blackout on the disaster. Because it's Iraq and that's what they do.
Yes.
But also, I suppose there's that argument that more panic ensues.
Well, yes, I guess more panic would ensue, but it's not like it's like all grain is poisoned. I mean, it's very easy to not eat the pink stuff. Like, if you say, some of this is poisoned, oh my God, how can we possibly tell? Well, it's the pink stuff. All right, wicked.
Yeah, but that's not how people are.
If
a government says to you, don't eat the pink stuff,
you'll
eventually convince yourself that you've eaten the pink stuff and go to the hospital and suddenly overload the hospital.
That's true. If they said...
I mean, I'm not defending the Iraqi regime here.
No, not this time. That's true, isn't it? If they put something on the news and said, like, a specific sort of bread was poisoned, every bastard would be at the hospital.
Absolutely.
Every bastard. Yeah. Going, oh, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was Warburton's.
So, government had given the warnings, they had done a complete news blackout, but they were warning people, and then what they tried to do was repossess as much of the wheat as possible in the quickest possible time. So they got the army involved to try and grab all this wheat back and get it all disposed of, and eventually they actually declared the death penalty for anyone found selling this wheat on. That's how serious they would. Yeah.
Tell you what,
they don't muck around, do they?
That's
a government that cares.
That's belt and braces, isn't it?
You would think that would be great, wouldn't you? Sort of this seeming crackdown on sorting this problem.
I mean, imposing the death penalty always works.
Well, you're right in a funny way, Phil, because this actually caused another problem, right?
Oh, right.
Farmers, they don't want to be killed.
No.
So what do? They can't sell their wheat.
Yeah.
They get rid of it. How do they get rid of it? A lot of it went into rivers.
Oh, Jesus.
That meant that the mercury got into the water supply.
Oh, that's bad news.
Which meant it found its way back to human beings.
Through fish.
Through fish, through the water supply, through the birds that ate the fish, and they ate the birds.
Oh,
and that not only caused more problem, but also caused an environmental disaster.
As I get older and older, it really feels like food is just all... It's all bound up in this big chain.
Phil.
Yes?
I've told you about the environmental disaster.
You have?
I've told you about chucking sacks of grain into the... rivers.
Yes.
What was the overall effect of all this?
6,530 patients were admitted to hospitals with poisoning.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of people.
And there were 459 deaths reported.
That is a lot, isn't it?
And this is overall, is it?
Yes.
Okay. There were also thousands of cases of permanent brain damage.
Oh.
Mercury poisoning is horrible.
God, there must be a load of people still around then.
Still. Oh, absolutely.
50
yeah.
years ago, isn't it?
The peak of the disaster occurred in January and was largely over by early March.
So I guess the measures the government took, they were slowly getting the grain back.
Yes, because anybody...
Out.
anybody who hasn't died from mercury poisoning, they have literally executed. But, you know, take what you will from that. I don't quite know. Anyway, the disaster was arbitrary. It struck both sexes, all ages, everybody. Although people under 10 years old represented a third of all hospital admissions.
Oh.
Because of the bloody pink bread.
Oh, that fun pink bread.
Mm. Now, the numbers we've just quoted are almost certainly an underestimate because it's Iraq, isn't it?
Yes, yes, right? Good point.
And because of the availability of hospital treatment in Iraq.
Yeah.
Hospitals were overcrowded and there was a lack of faith in treatment. There would have been a lot of cases that went unreported.
Yes, I also read somewhere that it's sort of customary to sort of die at home. It's the preferred.
Oh, really?
People prefer.
Well, I'd prefer to die at
home. Yeah, so a lot of people didn't even go to hospital.
And if there's this 2-week delay, I bet a lot of people died without knowing it was anything connected whatsoever, especially older people.
Mm.
Some Iraqi doctors believe that actually the figure could be 10 times higher.
Wow.
Than that. And that, to be fair, does seem likely to me, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly going to be higher than the official thing, whatever.
If that were the case, it would make about 65,000 cases.
Wow.
Which would extrapolate to about 4,600 deaths and 100,000 cases of brain damage.
Wow.
But that is like what we reckon, not what definitely.
That's kind of
is.
The worst case scenario.
Or like educated guess.
Wow, that's still a phenomenal amount, isn't it?
Were there any plus points to any of this horror film?
Well, a large number of patients with minor symptoms did recover completely, so that's good. And many of those with more serious symptoms did improve. So not everyone who got the serious symptoms.
Oh, so it wasn't a death sentence.
Not a guaranteed death sentence. Okay. So no, so a lot of people did recover. So that's okay. A positive thing. Also, as horrible as the thing was itself, the disaster did give doctors valuable information about mercury poisoning that they could sort of carry forward into the future.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're laughing.
It's a good sample, isn't it? Well, it's a good sample,
you know,
to find out what it's like if you poison millions of people with mercury.
We've done enough podcasts to realise that things have to happen
badly for
things to get better and for knowledge to
move on. Yeah.
Right. So, for example, Phil, it enabled the medical profession to confirm that mercury poisoning can pass to a child in utero and that mercury levels in the child were equal to or higher than in the mother. And that meant that new guidelines could be put in place regarding the susceptibility of fetuses and infants to mercury poisoning. In other words, you get pregnant, you go to the doctor, he says, if you ever find any pink bread, stay well away.
Yeah.
That'll affect you. It'll affect your child more.
Yeah. Don't go near a thermometer.
Yeah, none
or
of that.
A top hat. Particularly difficult where I grew up in the outskirts of Eton. What's mercury in? Apart from thermometers, top hats and poisoned grain.
Queen. In 1974, a joint Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and the World Health Organization, WHO, meeting made several recommendations to prevent a similar outbreak. These included stressing the importance of labelling bags in the local language with locally understood warning symbols that did not refer to pirates.
Yes. And this is a good 100 years after Humbug Billy discovered exactly the same thing.
This meeting between the FAO and the WHO also urged governments to strictly regulate mercury use in their respective countries and limiting its use in future to really where no other reasonable alternative was available.
There must be another way of transporting wheat without dipping it in mercury. There must be another way.
Also, Phil, the disaster helped towards the goal of setting up national poison control centres around the world. Always handy.
Yeah.
Further to this, it was recommended that in future, local and national media outlets should publicise outbreaks as they occurred.
Yeah.
Including the size of the outbreak and the symptoms, and not hush it up like all the Iraqis did.
Yeah, don't hush things up, right? If you've got poison in a thing, label it as poison. And if people start eating it, tell them it's bad for them. Just seems good
so
to
simple,
me.
So simple, doesn't it?
So, Phil, the 1971 Iraq poison grain disaster.
Yeah.
Our fault or God's fault, Phil Lucas?
Oh, I don't know, but we did mention the name Saddam Hussein during the podcast, so I'm blaming him.
Okay.
And...
Well, just because I like to keep the sort of liberal lefty end up, I'm going to blame Tony Blair. Definitely Blair's fault.
And they're both humans.
So it was our fault.
Their fault.
So, yes, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Crash Bang Wallet podcast. Apologies for it being mega, mega late. We'll try and tighten these episodes up again. We will get back up to our two-weekly schedule as soon as we can.
Yes, in the new year.
In the new year. We hope you have a lovely Christmas. We probably won't get an episode out before January now. So what we'll do is we'll redouble our efforts and we'll back with you in January.
Get podcast done.
Get podcast done. That's number one, isn't it?
There has been an advantage in us having a bit of time off, though.
What's that?
Built up the old lovely reviews from people.
Oh, yeah. We've had loads of lovely reviews. Yeah, thank you so much.
Who's
got in touch with us, Phil?
Eurosario. Top-notch Phil Foolery. Interesting tales on sometimes unusual disasters. Highly entertaining, regularly informative, very often irreverent. Lovely word, irreverent.
I like irreverent.
Surprisingly enlightening. Well worth a listen. Thank you very much. That's very, very kind of you.
Eurosario.
Got another one, Phil?
Built a wolf.
Oh.
As in, like, what have you been doing all day? Built a wolf. I've listened to every single episode. Built a wolf has listened to every single episode.
Yeah.
While he, she, they, it have been building a wolf over the last month. Except the one about the operation, as I have a weird and somewhat pathetic tendency to faint. I'll tell you what, so have I. For me, this podcast justifies a disaster's happening. Thanks, Built a Wolf.
Thank you. I love that. That's my favourite quote. Oh, dear. Thank you very much, Built a Wolf. And then we've had Arras.
Could be Arachi.
Could be. I'm not one for pronunciation.
No.
First up, objectively, this podcast is great.
Thanks, Arachi.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you. It's an enjoyable mix of disaster and mirth. Not seen since the birth of baby Jesus. Anyone with an ounce of interest in history without the textbook will do well to listen. And if you don't like it, you can probably just sod off. Well done, Phils. Thank you very much.
I would say that Arachi, or Arsi, he is exactly our demographic. Yeah.
We are providing a service that has not happened since some bloke in Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's right.
Or Bethlehem did a disaster podcast, but that would have had to have been by saying it live.
Yes, that's right.
No electronics.
Oratory.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to everyone.
For everybody who builds wolves and also gives us nice reviews. Thank you so much for reviewing the podcast. We love it when you review us. It makes us feel nice and warm inside, doesn't it? And we're especially thankful that you give us a nice review, seeing as we've not given you much content over the last
yes,
2 months.
Yes, we are sorry. Genuinely, as like we said before, no problems with the podcast. Totally happy. Love doing it. Enjoy doing it. Just life.
Okay, so we'll see you after Christmas. Have a fantastic Crimble period. Thank you so much for listening to the Crash Bang Wallop podcast this week, Mr. Philip Lucas.
Yes.
Phil,
Have
you got anything to add?
No.
Now, come on.
No.
Have a think.
Never do.
Take a moment.
No.
Take a breath.
I've nothing to add.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We will see you next time. Goodbye.